we're living in a culture of instant gratification, and it's just everyone's looking for quick fixes. And I say that from a place of compassion as well, because oh, yeah. you know, I've been there and I've been like, okay, oh my God, I don't know, like what to, I don't want to mess up this relationship. This might be my last chance. Like all this panic. Oh, let me have a look online, text template, copy paste it. And you know, like that kind of thing, it's a lot easier than doing like the inner work mm-hmm. to like heal your dysfunctional behaviors.
Welcome back. We are on today with my guest, Jerry Suter, on the Tool for Dish It podcast. I'm Angie S., the founder of AngieS.com. That's Angie-S.com. Link in the show notes. Well, I'm a health coach helping busy women fed up of trendy wellness bullshit look and feel younger effortlessly without Botox. To work with me, you can get in touch via the website or email me directly at hello@angie-s.com. So if you haven't yet, please share this podcast with your friends. Rate, review, subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or follow it on Spotify. For all the other platforms, whichever way you show love is how you can support this show. The more you do that, the more it helps new listeners discover this show. It takes 2 seconds and it's completely free for you to do. And it just really helps support me doing, like, releasing free content week after week. So I'd really, really appreciate it if you do that. Do you want to press pause and do it now? Oh, is that me just being a bit too pushy and controlling? No? I think it's cute. Come on, do it. Do it now. Okay, I'll back off. Today's guest, Jerry, went from being a love addict to a love and relationship coach. And together we go over why the formulas and the quick fix text templates that those love gurus are trying to sell you don't work. And we also go over some of the different types of fears we go through when dating and in relationships, like not wanting to be seen, not knowing how to connect and communicate, and fear of commitment. So I hope you enjoy it. This is another honest conversation. So without further ado, let's begin. Welcome, Jerry.
Hi, Angie.
Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So listen, I brought you on because when we spoke the other day, we've only just met recently, and I really loved your honesty about your journey on how you actually became a love and relationship coach. And it just made you like really relatable. A lot of things we were talking about, I was like, I could either see myself or my friends in some of it. I was just really excited to get into this with you. So before we dive into it, please introduce yourself, where you live and what you do.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Jerry Suter. I'm a love and relationship coach. And I live in a small village called Lochinver in the Scottish Highlands.
Is that where you're from?
No, I'm originally, well, I've got a bit of a mixed background. So I'm from Newcastle, so in the northeast of England, but also my dad's from Switzerland. So I grew up over there. So
oh, wow.
Okay. Spent a lot of my life moving about.
Okay. Oh, okay. 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 Yes. Okay. Yeah. So you're an international as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, yes. So can I just ask you, what made you become a love and relationship coach? Like, what's the story?
Yeah, sure. So basically, it started with my own struggles. So I spent most of my life probably struggling in love and relationships and just getting in and out of really dysfunctional relationships. And basically, yeah, my love life was just an absolute car crash. And I started on a journey of self-development a few years ago. I was working in London in a corporate environment, and it got to the point where I realized that it just wasn't for me. I really hated my job. I wanted to change everything. And so I left that job behind. I went traveling for a year around Australia. And during that time, I did yoga teacher training, and I loved doing that. It was a really wonderful journey, and it really did help me with a lot of what I had going on emotionally, physically. But one of the things that it didn't really support me with was my love life. So it was kind of like I had this outside facade of being, you know, really calm, and I was a yoga teacher and all of those things. But in the background, like things were really not going well. Mm-hmm. So the dysfunctional relationships that I was in, they were just taking over my whole life, and to the extent that I couldn't really concentrate on anything else. And so it got to kind of like a rock bottom point where I really realized that I had to make a change, that I had to do something about it, because it was starting to affect my mental health. It was starting to affect my physical health. So it was really quite intense.
Can you explain what you mean by they were taking over? Like you couldn't really function in life. So can you explain a bit what you mean by that?
Yeah, so it was just because I was spending so much time. For example, I was in a relationship with someone who was emotionally unavailable, and I was myself as well. And I spent probably most of the day in arguments, texting with that person, or mm-hmm. on the phone arguing, or kind of just a lot of drama going on.
Yes.
And at that time, I had just started my yoga business. I was studying counseling. I had like quite a full life, but I wasn't able to fully focus on any of those things because I was so distracted with what was going on in my relationships.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it got to the point where I really knew I had to make a change, because I was just emotionally drained. I just couldn't carry on in that way. And so I started off with therapy. So I got quite a lot of intensive therapy, and I went to Sex Love Addicts Anonymous meetings. And those things were really helpful in that they helped me to kind of like analyze what had been going on in my past and why I was behaving the way that I was behaving. But it didn't really support me with actionable change. So it kind of got to the point where I was like, okay, now I understand why I behave the way I behave, why I attract the people I attract, but like, where do I go from here? And so I spent some time like just not dating at all, being completely abstinent. And then I realized, well, okay, I'm not really going to learn anything from this.
Yeah, but that's a pattern actually a lot of us do. I mean, I my journey is slightly different, but I used to also go, well, I need to work on myself before I can go back dating, because I don't want to repeat the same crap. And then it's actually a therapist that said to me, yeah, but that's actually how you learn, is by actually going out and dating. What you're doing is you're stunting your development.
Absolutely.
You're stunting your healing. You're supposed to heal, supposed to hurt because of your background and how you are operating and your upbringing. That's why you need to basically break through that
exactly.
practice. But yeah, we think that we're trying to protect ourselves and others by not dating them, but actually it's not helping.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I just wasn't really learning anything or making any progress. And, you know, I got stuck in this cycle of kind of like looking for all these like quick fix strategies and like things that would work instantly. And it got to the point where I just realized, okay, I really need to do some real inner work. And that's when I encountered the teacher who I did my coach training with, Layla Martin. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And a lot of her work is around embodiment. So it was kind of like, I knew I needed to get out of my head and just kind of like thinking about everything that was going on and really get into my body to clear all of the things that were holding me back in love and relationships.
Okay. So just a few things. Thank you, Jerry, by the way. You dropped a few things. I want to like, let me just actually, wait, let me see. Okay. There's four things I want to ask you about what you just mentioned. So you mentioned that you went to like Love and Sex, what was it? Love and Sex Addicts Anonymous?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what made you realize that you were, first, what is it? How do you define a love and sex addict?
Well, for me, the way it presented was mainly love addiction. And the definition of that really is that because I realized that I didn't have any control over my behavior. So it was really, if you kind of compare it, for example, to an alcoholic with alcohol, and they can't control the amounts that they're drinking. It was kind of like I couldn't control the way I was behaving in relationships, the really destructive way that I was behaving. And so like one example is kind of like the text message battles. Like I couldn't just put my phone on the table and walk away from it. Mm-hmm. Like I actually physically just couldn't do it. And like, you know, I suppose like a lot of my friends around me were kind of like, okay, why don't you just walk away from this relationship? You know that it's harmful. You know that it's not good for you. And I was like, but I just physically can't do it. Like I don't have the tools. I don't know how to like get out of it. I just keep getting pulled back in and I don't know why. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. It was kind of just this, I think the definition for me, like the addiction, was that it was just like out of control.
Yeah. And that's actually, you know, when people say, I mean, there's two different, the way I see it, there's two different levels when people say, why are you staying? Why can't you leave that person? Well, one thing, telling that to someone, like leave him or leave her, the thing is that it's really well meant, but it's a very bad move, because if your friend goes back, stays with that in that toxic relationship, you're going to be the bad guy. And two, it's going to make that relationship almost stronger, like it's us against them. And so you sort of almost like enabling that vicious cycle, right? Like the more people are saying, don't go back. It's like, yeah, but it's bad. That's why I go back. But you know, it's that we don't do it because it's good for us. It's like smoking cigarettes. We don't do it because we think it's healthy. We all know it's bad for us. I mean, exactly. I know I'm also always a couple of bad decisions away from smoking again or making bad decisions again. So there is that. But the other thing is, with going back and not being able to stay away, there is an actual scientific explanation, is that, you know, the feel-good hormones, like, that we know are around the corner after the bad time. So if he really misbehaves, but you know he's going to come back and say, so sorry, how much he loves you, how amazing you are, and the high and the amazing sex and makeup sex and all of that kind of stuff. It's a hook. Just like, you know, going back for your next, whatever it is the people are into nowadays, what kind of drugs? I don't know what the youth are doing.
I was in the 70s.
I don't know what they're doing today.
I mean, it is. It's like you say, it's like, it is like a drug, because there's extreme highs and lows. And also, you might have heard of the term trauma bonding.
Yes.
And that's really that like accentuating of, it's us against them.
Yeah, it really is a trauma bond. It's very akin to the Stockholm syndrome, with people are taken hostage. I mean, we talk about this with Shannon Higgins. She's a psychotherapist. She's been on the show 3 times talking about hidden abuse, and she talks about the trauma bond and the cycle with the addiction of all the feel good hormones that gets released, and then you're waiting for that hook, and that's what people are staying with. Abusive partners. I'm not saying that yours were abusive partners, but it's to explain the extent. That's what people say with people who beat them up, because there's that hook around the corner. It's one of the many reasons. There's a few reasons, but
And I think for me, what was really helpful with the community when I was part of that and going to those meetings, is that for a really long time, I felt completely alone in the struggle. I just felt like it was just me. Nobody else was going through this. I was crazy, like all of those things. And I think the first time I went to a meeting and just sat there and heard everyone else's stories, I was like, okay, this isn't just me.
Yes.
And that was like a really huge shift.
It's a huge shift, because when no one talks about, I mean, they must have made you feel quite anxious and depressed at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough. So, you know, you said like you knew, now you may not want to answer that question, by the way. And I understand if you don't want to, but I was just wondering, you said that you started to understand why you were attracting the people that you were attracting, the type of relationships. Is that something you'd want to share?
So it's around really subconscious patterns that were created in childhood. So it's kind of like, you know, that it does all go back to childhood. It's really cliche, but in my experience, I found that it did. And for me growing up, it was really in the, like, my parents weren't getting on. They got divorced. My dad had just started a business. He wasn't around a lot. And so there was just a sense of within me, like a sense of feeling abandoned.
Yes.
And so what I realized after having been to therapy, it was that I was trying, in the relationships that I was getting into, I was trying to repair that. But I was doing that with people who were just going to bring me back into that same experience.
Yes. Yes.
So it was just kind of repeating the same, sort of bringing back the same patterning in terms of abandonment that I'd experienced in childhood. So that was kind of like the root of it.
And it's kind of it's so important to realize that, like, but it's at the same time as it's like humbling, it's also like, what the fuck? You it's almost like your eyes are open and you go, I can't believe I've been doing this my whole life. What?
Yeah.
But it's an important shift because you start to, for me, when I knew why I was doing what I was doing, I could look at all my previous partners and go, I don't want any of you anymore. Not because they're bad people, or it's not to diss them at all, but it was more to go, oh, there is no regrets. There's no, oh, maybe one day we could have been. Because I just realized it's like this, I could not unsee anymore what had been happening.
Yes, and that's so true.
Yeah.
And for me, I realized that all of the partners that I'd had, they were kind of like the same thing, just in different men. Like they all had exactly the same patterns. They all had the same behaviors. It was all the same issues. Just like it was, just a bit like Groundhog Day, just like the same thing over and over again, just with a different person.
Oh yeah. And they all have, you know, it doesn't even matter like their hair color, skin color, religion, anything like that. It's just all the same person, just in different outfits. It's just so shocking that you're like, wait, I thought I was like changing it up or different, and you don't. So you also mentioned, actually, I'm going to keep this question for afterwards because you mentioned about the instant fix. And I want to talk about this when we go into like the rules and what people are doing in a minute. And then I also want to touch into a bit later about, you know, you said like you needed to do the embodiment work and getting out of your head. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, Jerry, I'm going to need to talk about that because that is so hard. My head is like at 100 miles an hour. I don't even know
how. Oh, yeah. Me too.
It's so hard. I get times where like I work out and I meditate and I'm really like more in control of it. But my nature is my head goes at like this. What would be like something that you'd say to someone to help them get out of their head and into their body? And what does that really mean?
Yeah. So I think when I start working with clients, sometimes they get a bit frustrated for those reasons because they're kind of like, because the practices that I use are practices that speak to the subconscious mind. So that's things like breath work, meditation, visualization. And if you don't have any experience with those practices, it can be really frustrating. But what I say is just to start off with something really doable. Like it doesn't have to be like an hour, even if it's just a minute of doing breath work before like you come out of it, it's still really impactful. So it's just starting small. And also there's this misconception, and I learned this from when I was a yoga teacher, that when you're meditating that, you know, your mind's not supposed to wander. And it's like we're human and our minds are always going to wander. And that's part of the process. And it's just that being kind with ourselves and being like, okay, my mind's went off somewhere else. I'm going to bring it back now and just keep going with the process. So it's not this kind of like, if you're embodied, you're going to be embodied 24 hours a day.
No.
It's more kind of like bringing yourself back to it when you feel that it's really needed so that you have the tools to cope with difficult situations that come up.
And it's also important during sex as well to be able to turn off your mind. So if anything, that's also a great exercise.
Yeah.
You know, thinking of like a 360 good for your health kind of situation, you know.
Exactly.
But I think also, like you said about people think that when you meditate, your mind is quiet. And it definitely is. And I think like I have this trick that I learned a couple of years back is that when a thought comes up, there's two different things I can choose from. So one of the method I use is that, let's say there's a thought that comes, I'll be like literally visualize almost like a cloud and I'm literally picturing it going somewhere, just leaving, you know, almost like when you see a cloud going past, you're lying down on the grass, just go past. Or the other thing is I go, well, it may not make sense when I say it like this because I learned it through doing another exercise first, but when a thought comes, that thought actually came from out of nowhere. You can't pinpoint. It's almost like intangible. You have to picture it like it came from the void and it's going to go into the void. And I literally picture it. Let's say if the thought comes up going, oh, I've got a big nose or I'm stupid or whatever it is, or I've got to go and buy some tomatoes. I've got to buy some tomatoes later. You know, whatever comes up, I actually go, well, it came from the void and it's going back into the void, but like I see it moving from the void behind my head into the void in front of my head. That's all I think, and it kind of helps. Yeah, because it has no meaning. I'm like, that's okay. It's like a little gremlin walking past you. Just ignore it. That's fine. It's there, acknowledge, and then let it go.
Yeah, and it's kind of like there's this cheesy statement that comes to my mind that I also share with my clients when they're getting started on this journey, and that's just that it's a practice, not perfection.
Yes.
So it's not like there's this expectation to get it completely right from day one. It's a journey, and it's just something that you keep coming back to.
Yeah. And it's also okay, like, that you can't be completely silent. I mean, we all have bills to pay. People have kids, people, you know, or people want kids, and people have to go to work. They have bosses, colleagues, neighbors, you know, they have to do the dishes. There's so much thing going on. It's, you know, you have to also just be like, I guess, like, kinder to ourselves that it's okay.
Yeah. And I think it's also kind of like not being so attached to what embodiment looks like, in the sense that some days it might not be meditating, some days it's dancing and just like getting some music on and like shaking and moving your body. And it's kind of like just figuring out what works for you and then keep coming back to that.
And even like, she just, and then we'll move into the next bit, but you just made me think of another thing that I think, I don't know if it was Eckhart Tolle that I learned that from in one of his books, that I think a good way to embody is to, even when you wash your hands, just really feel the water, feel your skin touching your skin, just being aware of that. That's, I think that's also embodiment, just to feel your body. Yeah. So I was just thinking, people are probably tired of washing their hands now, but that's probably not a great example, because that is hurting. It's like, ow, 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 it's sensitive. Okay. So now I want to go into, I should have asked you this straight ahead. I should have asked this from up top. I'm really sorry. What's your relationship status?
I'm engaged now.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, congratulations. I've been doing the work, getting married next year. And it's just, sometimes I'm still a bit in awe of it, really, the relationship that I've created with my partner. And it really was something that I honestly never thought would be possible for me. So it's really beautiful.
Do you want to tell us your engagement story, or how you met, or like how much are you? I know sometimes people want to keep things private. So
absolutely. So I met my fiance through a work colleague. Mm-hmm. So I was doing like some part-time work when I was teaching yoga, and it was just like on a night out. And it's really funny because I didn't actually want to go out that night. Mm-hmm. And something in my head was just kind of like, just go out, have a couple of drinks, see what happens. and obviously I'm really glad that I did now. And I think it was really interesting because it was the first sort of relationship that I got into where I had, you know, been doing the inner work for a while, where I had like all of the tools. So I didn't really have an attachment to it. I saw it more as kind of like an experiment.
That's so exactly sort of like, how people should do it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was kind of like, okay, well, I have like all these tools now. Let's kind of just like experiment and see what happens. And, you know, there was a lot of things going on in my head as well, because like he's quite a lot younger than me. So there was like those kind of like gremlins coming up, like, oh, you know, like what does society think? And what are the people going to think? And all those things. And it was just, so there's a lot of like work to do around that as well. And it was just for the first time in my life, I think in a relationship, I just gave myself permission to go really, really slowly. So it was like, we spent a lot of time just getting to know each other as friends. And for me to just figure out, okay, is this actually someone I would want to be in a relationship with? Whereas in the past, I'd kind of just jumped in straight away and been like, oh, but you know, what if this person doesn't want me, without even figuring out if I wanted to be with them.
Yeah.
So I just took like a lot more time, took things a lot slower. And we met in March 2018, and we got engaged last summer.
So was that summer 2019?
Yes. July 2019. Yeah. And we were supposed to be getting married this month.
Oh yeah, no, that's cancelled.
that's cancelled. So that's been moved to next June, but it's okay. It just gives us a bit more time to be in the engagement bubble. So that's
exactly,
nice.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, you mentioned about the, you know, jumping into relationship too soon in the past, and also about you had tools. I want to ask the thing about your tools, because obviously I know that when we spoke, we talked about you know, how nowadays when people are dating, it gets so confusing because I think people are talking different languages, trying to be in the same room, but yeah, talking different languages. So some people are following people like Matthew Hussey or The Rules, mm-hmm, or Why Men Love Bitches.
Yeah.
And then Why Men Marry Bitches. Oh. And it's like, and all of it is like cookie cutter.
Yes.
You know, scenarios. It's like text to this. I mean, the amount of videos I see, like, just 7 texts to make him fall in love. I'm like, fuck that. Like, I'm so sorry, but that's like, it's, and I say that because I tried it.
Me too. Put my hand up, me too.
It does not work. And the reason why, also why I know it doesn't work, it's not because, oh, I didn't look into the method well enough. It's not because none of that. It's because it got done to me and I could see it from a mile away. I was sniffing it. It didn't feel natural and it felt really off and I was really put off. And it wasn't even in like in what that person wrote in the text, but it was like the amount of time you wait before you respond. It was all very contrived and I could tell. I could predict it almost. It was just like, I was like, you know what? Fuck off. And I was like, oh, that is how it feels like when it's done to you.
Yeah.
And I had a taste of my own medicine. I was just like, yeah, those things do not work. It's so unnatural. Can you tell a bit more about this? Like, because what bugs me with those things is like those games and rules gurus, quote unquote, are so popular, you know, in the dating coaching industry. And I don't even know how those people have success stories. I'm thinking, is it like despite of those things or what the fuck? Like, why? Can you give us like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. So I think, you know, we're living in a culture of instant gratification and it's just everyone's looking for quick fixes. And I say that from a place of compassion as well, because you know, I've been there and I've been like, okay, oh my God, I don't know, like what to, I don't want to mess up this relationship. This might be my last chance. Like all this panic. Oh, let me have a look online, text template, copy paste it. And you know, like that kind of thing, it's a lot easier than doing like the inner work to like heal your dysfunctional behaviors. Because you know, like I'm always completely transparent with my clients when I start working with them. It's not easy and it's ongoing and it's not going to happen overnight. And, you know, even though I'm in a happy relationship now, I still have to do the work, you know, when my triggers come up and when my patterns come up. So I think there's something around that. It's just we're in this culture where everyone's looking for instant results. And I see that so often with my clients as well. It's like we'll have one or two sessions and they'll get really frustrated because they're like, I'm not seeing results.
Yeah.
But but we've had one session.
But you know, also the other thing is when those people who have all these like, here are 7 texts so that you can blah, blah. What those people are doing is actually... and I'm not saying they do this intentionally. I'm sure like, I know I mentioned Matthew Hussey, The Rules Games. I'm sure they probably like all believe in what they're doing. I have no idea about the intention. But what I'm saying is that what they are doing is not kind, because what they're refusing to tell people is that, no, you acted like a little bitch. I'm sorry. But you act like a little bitch. You overreacted. You look like you're acting, you're being neurotic. You need to work on yourself.
Exactly.
What they do is like, of course he should love you. You're amazing. Yeah, we are all amazing, but we don't package it in a good way. We don't, you know, we let ourselves being taken carried away by our triggers. And if someone had the decency to tell someone, listen, that one's on you. Like, you probably shouldn't have sent that text. You probably shouldn't have gone off on him, or you should have just walked away. Like, maybe that guy, he's cheating all the time. You maybe need to leave. I don't know. You know, it's not about, here's a plaster for your broken leg. That's what they're doing. And that's actually a mean thing to do, because they want to be nice and liked by all their followers probably. And they're making tons of money on the back of it, but they're not being real. And that I have a problem with.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And it's just, it's not sustainable. And that's kind of what I see with it, because it's like, it's also ingraining into, it's conditioning into people that as they are is not enough and is not okay. And that they don't have the answers within themselves and they have to look to someone else to tell them what to do. Yeah. It's like, okay, so you're not capable of this, so I need to tell you how to do it. And it's like, and it's with those strategies, which like, as I was saying, I've tried myself, it's because, you know, I was using them because I didn't know how to build real intimacy with someone. And so what happened is that all of the men I was attracting through that were men that were playing games as well. And they didn't have the capacity to act intimately in to build real intimacy. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of, it was perpetuating that. And also you were mentioning about the sort of, yeah, I've lost my train of thought, but I'll come back to it.
Was it because I talked about like, they don't tell people when they're being little bitches?
Yeah, well, that's it. That's, yes, that, thank you. That's brought me back to my point. So it's around accountability. So for me, there was a really long journey as well around dismantling all of my beliefs about men, because uh-huh. I've gotten so like conditioned with this, you know, like all men are trash and, yeah, you know, like all of those things. And I was kind of like, hang on a minute, when I really started to take the time to examine myself. And I was like, you know, honestly, like in all honesty, a lot of my behaviors were completely unacceptable.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, like I'm behaving in ways that are like totally crazy. And I'm expecting that I'm going to meet someone who is different than that. Like it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So it was like I had to do like, and that's also uncomfortable. It's like taking the accountability, showing up for yourself and being like, okay, I can't control what other people do. Like I can't control if this guy doesn't respond to my text that says more about him than it does about me. I can only control like what I do with that, how I react to that.
Yeah. And would you say also like, I know you said like, you know, you realized that some of your behavior was unacceptable. Did you also find that you were accepting below par behavior? So it kind of goes both ways. So you were being acting out, but you were also accepting other people acting out, right? So
exactly.
It's like, it's like this contradiction almost.
Because I wasn't in alignment because I was kind of saying to myself, oh, I want to be, you know, in a happy, committed, lasting relationship. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that, but like I'm acting in a completely different way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That is actually one of the things as well I realized with I was always around emotionally unavailable men. And when I say that, they were not married, they were not in a relationship, they were truly single. I mean, they're probably dating, you know, other people like the way they were dating me, but they were like single, they were not in a relationship. As far as I was concerned, I was the only one. That's mm-hmm. how it looked anyway. But they seemed very keen, but they were just not available. And then they'll just, you know, I'll do one bad thing and bath, they were gone. Or but the thing what I realized was that I was the one who was afraid to commit.
Yeah.
I was not available. I was giving them nothing. I didn't. And I also never let them help me, never let them do anything for me, which for a man, they said, I say in a straight dynamic, heterosexual dynamic, then if you're not letting the guy, you know, do little things for you, he doesn't feel like he's needed. He's going to lose the interest to do things. You've got to let him. And it's interesting because it took me a long time as well to realize that. But I also, you know, you mentioned about you used to think that men were trash or you said something about, you know, that men were something, your belief system.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it took me a long time to realize that men were not the enemy. And until it got pointed out to me, I couldn't let them in. And even then, it took a lot of work to realize, oh, wait, he's not. I didn't even realize I was doing it. It was someone who pointed out to me at work who said, you know, he's not. I was talking about the guy I was in a relationship at the time. She was like, you know, he's not the enemy, right? And I was like, and it something just like clicked. And I was just like, consciously, I'm sure I knew, but I realized in that moment, I was like, fuck, I am actually acting out and talking as if he is. I'm always on guard. Or I just could not see him as a friend almost. Although I thought I was, but.
Yeah. And if you think someone's the enemy, that's really going to impact the way you show up in that dynamic.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Absolutely. It's, but you know what you were saying about the games and the rules about, you know, what they're also saying is that what you are not enough, that you need this kind, this set of text or this set of, this is what you should say and do. I think that's right, what you're saying. But at the same time, it's interesting because they are kind of conveying this message that wait, you need me to make sure your relationship works. But what they're doing is that they, at the same time, they're saying, no, but you're amazing. Of course, he should just adore you.
Yeah.
If he doesn't love you, it's on him. Yeah, fair enough. If someone doesn't like me, I don't have to like them back. I mean, I'm not down for that anymore. But it's like, there is this, what's the word? It's not contradiction. I've lost the word now, but.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I would say it is contradiction. It's kind of like conflicting in the sense that.
Yeah, conflicting.
Yeah, it's conflicting in the sense that it's like, well, you know, love yourself, you're amazing, but you don't like, no one will accept the real you. So you have to change yourself for someone to want to be with you.
Yeah, you have to put my words into your mouth and say that to him.
And it doesn't work because you can't keep it up. Like if you're not being authentic and you're not showing up as your true self, then it's like, well, you know, that's going to get found out sooner or later.
Yeah,
and absolutely. What happens then?
And it's interesting because I think once you're ready, that person also in a way shows up. I mean, like it's interesting, the different feeling. I mean, you must have felt that when you met your guy, who is now your fiance, that you couldn't get away with not being complete, like a bit more in, a bit more open, a bit more yourself, because he, you know, like I can tell this now, like when, for me, like I can tell, I can't just, that person actually wants to connect with me. Now I'm, you know, when I date, the man wants to know me, wants to spend time with me, wants to hear about my day, wants to, you know, he's really, really engaged and wanting to know and wanting to find out about me, very patient with me, you know, in intimacy, everything. Just
exactly.
Actually being a man. And it didn't come in the shape or form that I thought would come into. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like,
yes.
And that's like, it's very humbling. It's very interesting because sometimes I still have to like remind myself, oh, wait, wait. Sometimes I'm like, wait, is this real? Because because you're so used to such like being unavailable myself. I don't even know what it's like to be available for someone else almost. And it's like, oh, wait, wait, wait. I have to now. Oh, okay. Now I need to actually be. And it's dynamic.
Yeah. And it's like, it's relearning. I mean, you know, especially if for me, I knew I never really had any models of what healthy relationships looked like. Mm-hmm. So when I got into one in the beginning, I was kind of like, okay, like what happened? How, you know, it was just all really new to me. It was like, wow, you can actually communicate about something difficult without arguing, or you can feel safe enough with someone to like express how you really feel and be honest with them and put everything out on the table and they won't walk away from that. It was all just like really new. And it was kind of like, for me, I had to come back to like creating a lot of safety for myself so that I could keep showing up and keep being like, okay, it's safe to be in this situation and it's okay to be with someone that's there for you, basically. So it was like a lot of retraining my behaviors and sort of belief systems around
relationships. And it is actually so much more fun to be able to be, because I'm a bit mischievous, I'm definitely feisty, but it's fun to be able to be all those things and the other person to say, oh my God, you're so naughty, you know, but they call you out before you even know yourself. And it's kind of funny, but like they actually like it, or the fact that you can just be yourself is so liberating. It's quite healing, actually.
And I often get like when I first got together with my fiance, a lot of my friends were like, oh my God, like, you know, like, what's your secret? Like, how did you get from all these really shitty relationships into this? And I was like, you know, there isn't really a secret. I just had to do like all the work. I had to like address my behaviors. And it was, it was like, I had to go through like all of that process to get there. It didn't kind of like happen overnight.
It definitely does not come. Yeah, definitely not. And actually, I want to actually go into the next bit, which probably is going to explain some of this, but it's like the different types of clients that, or like, do you work mainly with women or with men or both? Or
I work only with women.
Okay. Yeah. So with the women, like what, you know, what have you observed in terms of, are there like different types of clients, like different types of women that come to you that need, they have a particular struggle they're dealing with, and obviously how they approach dating is different to each other. Like, do you have like a different type, I guess, and for lack of a better word, like different categories or types of clients that you see and you're observing?
Yeah, so there's three sort of general types that I see, or three general challenges that I see. And that's, I have clients who struggle with being seen. So that looks like not putting themselves out there to date at all. Mm-hmm. So they're just kind of like not even open. And then I have clients who struggle with connecting. So when they do meet someone that they like, they don't know how to communicate, or they don't know how to create intimacy. And then I have clients who struggle with commitment. So that could present in different ways, just kind of like being commitment phobic or being avoidant. And also that's like the attachment styles, and then the opposite spectrum of being like so anxious that you're pushing away that commitment. So those are kind of like the different challenges I see.
And by the way, we can definitely be all three in one.
Oh yeah. I mean, I struggle with all of these. Yeah. I struggle with all of these.
Because I'm like, tick, tick.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, tick. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of like, and what I've found is, you know, as for example, like with clients who are struggling with being seen, once they do put themselves out there to date, then comes the next challenge of not knowing how to communicate.
Well, yeah, because if you don't know how to, don't want to be seen, you haven't practiced how to communicate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's just continuing to kind of grow through like all the different layers that come up. And even once you are in a relationship, and then those layers will continue to come up as well. And it's just like continuing to work through actively what comes up.
So let's say if someone's not really sure, so they're listening to this and they go, okay, being seen, communicating, commitment. Someone who may not have done any sort of like, you know, inner work or gone to therapy, or sort of question themselves, or they're not really clear. Because I know a lot of the things for me, I thought I knew why I was acting out the way I was acting out, but I could not fix it. It wasn't until someone actually mentioned how it felt, like, is that thing that's, so it's the same therapist I mentioned earlier, but it's like, she was saying that it's because it feels familiar to you. This feeling of like, it's that familiarity. So it feels like love, but it's not. It's just, it's a feeling of, it's familiar. You've been there before. The way they make you feel, the way you feel around them, all of this stuff, you're confusing all of this with passion and love, when it's actually, it's anxiety, it's unavailability, all of these different things. And it was almost like that sort of like really opened my eyes. I was like, wait. Oh, and then I had to then I had to do a diary every time I'd go out dating. I'd go on all these dates, dating like different types of men completely. I got help. I got a matchmaker. Mm-hmm. And I had to write down how I felt after each date. Mm-hmm. And I realized that the ones I was attracted to, it was quickly nipped in the bud, because I realized I felt not enough. They said something a bit nasty, that kind of stuff. I was kind of, so whereas now I'm like, ew, ew. But it took me a long time. It was like a good year and a half of active dating after I'd realized that, to suddenly feel attracted when someone was good to me like that.
Yeah.
It's not like my exes were bad to me. They just were not right for each other. But to actually go, oh, no, that's boring, to going, oh gosh, that's really hot. Wait a minute. Come over here. You know, it's a bit, that was a transition I had to pass, because for me, sex is important. And so I needed to have that attraction, but it's really difficult when you're not used to it.
Yeah. So it's like, I completely agree with that sense of familiarity, because for me, I had to retrain myself around that, in the sense that if it wasn't like fireworks the first time I met someone, that I wouldn't just discount them. So it was kind of like that, being really aware, like you were saying, learning about the fact that actually, you know, when, like I was mentioning earlier about how when I met my partner, that I actually took the time to get to know him first. And I just had to be really mindful when those feelings were coming up of, You know, like, was like, for me, the way it presented was like, for me, drama equaled love.
Yes.
So it was like, if there was an argument, or there wasn't like, if he wasn't texting me 24 hours a day, or like all of those things, then it wasn't love. That's kind of like what I was telling myself. So it was just a process of keeping reminding myself of, you know, learning about like what a healthy relationship looks like, or more really what I wanted it to look like.
Yeah. And also I think then I want to go back into like, how can we help someone who's listening know where they need to start? But I think the beautiful thing about when you're doing this kind of work and really dig deep, and it's ugly, it's difficult, it takes time. But it's also great because you eventually start to, that behavior that you learn, this new insight you have about yourself will help you in all the different areas in your life. So this is not just about being with someone that's good for you and you're good for them, but it impacts the other areas of your life. But also the other good thing is that when you do this work, you start to really be put off by these old patterns. You get put off by people, whether it's men, colleagues, boss, family members, you name it, who are just being shitty, who are not good for you. You don't want to engage with it anymore, and it frees you up, and you become more comfortable in your own skin. You become more whole as a person in yourself. And that's the whole message about what you were saying earlier, is that other people say, oh, you're not good enough, you need to do this. Actually, when you realize that you are good enough, it doesn't come from this place of delusion anymore, of like, you should just love me even regardless of how I'm acting out. It comes from this place of like, you know, I'm confident. If you don't love me, that's okay. I don't need this drama, this nonsense. And you come from this place of real like strength, but also this lovely softness about you that can let someone in. And it's not an easy place to get to, in this constant, you know, you have to stay aware. I'm definitely not done on my journey either. I'm sure something's going to pop up and I'm going to be triggered, and I'm going to want to either run, because I'm really good at that, running, or, you know, like, or shutting down and whatnot. It's not always easy, but it's important for ourselves to be just this whole person, because we are enough.
And it's so worth it. For me, I found it really did impact every other area in my life. Because now that I have this foundation of being in a relationship where I feel safe, where I feel loved and respected, it means that, you know, I can focus on my work without having to worry about what's going on in my relationship. I can focus on, you know, other parts of self-development, and I can kind of like really just live my life to its full potential without being stuck in that cycle. But around one of the things that I would recommend if you're really just getting started on this journey, and that was a huge game changer for me, was learning about the different attachment styles.
Yes.
And there's some really great books that you can read. And that was one of the first steps for me. And when I learned about my attachment style, it allowed me to forgive myself so much, because I was like, okay, you know, of course I'm acting like this, because this is the patterning that I'm coming from. And also when I learned that you could change your attachment style, because I think that's one of the challenges that I had when I was going to the Sex Love Addicts Anonymous meetings, was that it was this kind of, which I stopped eventually, because you had to keep presenting with this identity of being an addict. And it was kind of like, for me, that just felt like, okay, so that means that's me for life. And that felt really limiting. Whereas when I learned about my attachment styles, it was like, okay, you know, for example, mine's an anxious attachment style, but I know that like, it's possible to become secure. And I am in a secure space now. So it was like, it's actually possible to make the changes. And that was really comforting and helpful. And so when my triggers started to come up, I could be like, oh yeah, okay, this is anxious behavior coming up, and this is why. And that really, really helped, that self-awareness.
Yeah. And I definitely recommend, I'm just going to see what it was called. It was called The Book Attached. And I want to see who, don't know if it's the same one.
Ami Levine.
I think so. Yeah, definitely. Yes. Sounds. Yes. Attached by Ami Levine and Rachel Heller.
Yeah, that book was just, that was like one of the first things I read. And do all the exercises. That's another thing. Don't just like read it, but like do all the exercises. And that for me was like huge game changer, because it's kind of, it like it helped me to identify where I was at, so I could actually start with something.
Yeah, no, I think also it is a good book. It's a good place to start off with that kind of stuff. And so, do you think, like, you know, would there be, what are the signs you would say to someone? So I want to go back into the three categories. So one was like not being authentic self. Two, not being able to connect. Three, not being able to connect in the communication part. And three was a commitment part. Mm-hmm. So the number one, I want to ask you what the signs are, so people can sort of like understand a bit more on a real level. If someone is afraid to be seen, not being their authentic self, what are the signs? How does it manifest?
So it would manifest in not dating at all. So like actually not even putting yourself in positions where you could potentially meet someone. So it's just kind of like with some clients I've worked with, I've seen this in the way that like they've been single for 10 years, but they're not going out to like even put themselves out there to meet someone, or going online, or going to like events or anything, you know, where it would actually be possible for them to meet someone. So it's just that complete closing down and kind of like resigning to being single. And I see a lot of people with this kind of like kidding themselves in the sense that, oh, well, you know, I don't really need intimacy. Like I'm okay as I am. I don't need a relationship.
Yeah. And in one way though, I do want to defend that. I think we can totally operate, you know, single. Absolutely. But I think it's understanding why you choose to be single. Right. So if it's because that is your thing, some people are just not born to, they just don't want to, they're not interested, or they may not be interested in doing the work, whatever it is, it's their choice. Right. But I think if there is somewhere inside that's nagging them, then it's worth to just having a look at that. If it's nagging you that you like not really meeting people, that you're not in a relationship, but you do on some level want to, then that could be a place to start.
Yeah, exactly. No, I completely agree with you. It's definitely about like the life choices and knowing what's right for you. I think when it becomes difficult, if it's kind of like if you're just stuck in that situation because you don't know how to get out of it, not because it's an active life choice.
Exactly. And it's interesting because actually when you said about not being seen, I almost confused it with the second part, the other category, because I thought, oh, that's also when you're dating, not wanting to be seen, not being authentic. But actually you're right. That is probably like the communication part, because when you cannot connect to another person and you don't know how to communicate, you don't communicate, you don't speak out, it's because you're afraid to be seen. But it manifests in the relationship when you're not communicating. Those are telltale signs.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's also what I see a lot is, and this is especially common in women, it's struggling to, you know how to get their needs met in a healthy way and like ask for what they actually want. And like I get so many women saying to me, is it okay, like, if I tell him that I want a relationship, because he'll run away if I say that? And I'm like, no, you need to like communicate what you want, whereas like once you feel safe to communicate with that person, of course, if it's a safe person to communicate with, you know, you need to be like transparent and honest, because like otherwise you're not showing up authentically. If you're going through the whole dating period pretending you don't want a relationship, and then you're surprised when they don't want one either.
Right. This is so interesting. Okay. So I'm going to add something to that. Cause, so for those who've like listened to me from the beginning, they would have heard me like last year say, no, I don't bring it up. If he does want a relationship, you know, I don't say it, then I'll just like move on. But I don't say it to the guy, because I quite like alpha guys. I quite like, you know, guys who take the lead and, you know, they just want to look after it. I just love that stuff. And so, but what I've realized since then, circle back to what you're saying now, is that it's not about not saying you don't want a relationship. It's about actually how you say it. So, because it will feel disingenuous if you say, no, I'm okay, I'm good with hooking up, I'm all right, I'm good with dating, whatever we're doing, I'm good. They can tell you're lying. They don't. Yes. They may not know consciously, but their brain is flagging it up because they can sense it. Like you know, obviously I'm talking here with like heterosexual men to women, but mm-hmm. it would be the same if you were dating a woman or if you're a man dating a man, you will feel it. That something's not right. You're like, wait, I'm picking up on something. It feels off. It will feel off, right? Because I've had that with guys telling me, no, we're good because of what I don't want to commit, right? And they're like, no, I'm good with it. And I can tell they're not good with it. And exactly. So it goes both ways. And so we need to give the other parties a bit more credit. They will know that you're not really feeling what you're saying. And I think, so there is that bit. So not denying it doesn't help. But then if you say it from a place of really neediness, it's so off-putting as well. If you say, I really want a relationship with you. Please, be my boyfriend, be my girlfriend, be my partner, be my this, be my everything.
Oh, yeah.
That's like, even just saying it makes me cringe, right?
Yeah. So,
but it's like, there's something hot. Oh, sorry, you were going to say.
No, I think it's just around like even having the clarity within yourself so that you're just like, okay, I do want a long-term relationship at some point or a committed relationship when I meet the right person. And it's not like, you know, you have to tell that to everyone on the first date that you go on, but it's just so that if you meet someone and they're super clear from the beginning, from either their words or their behavior, that they don't want a relationship, then you get to make the choice of, okay, do I pursue this because this person is really clear that they don't want what I want? So what do I do now?
Yeah.
And this is another thing about kind of like what we were talking about earlier, the rules and like all that kind of stuff. It's like this, oh, well, you know, if you pretend that you don't want a relationship, at some point he'll change his mind.
Ugh.
And it's like, no, it's like, this is something I repeat to my clients so often. It's like, listen to what he's saying.
Yeah.
Believe what he's saying.
Believe what he's saying, but also look at his actions.
Yeah.
Because that will speak much louder. Because not everybody is good with words. And some people are too good with words. Okay. So the thing with like, I guess to circle back with that thing with like, you know, saying what you want or need, if someone says to you, look, don't freak out. I know you're not ready for this, but like, I like you. I actually want to relate, you know, I do eventually want to, I see myself being with you. I want to have a relationship with you. I'm not here to mess about. And then leave it. No expectations back. Then move on to the next topic. You know, let's go get ice cream, go for a walk, whatever. That's a very different dynamic because all that does is that person go, oh, okay, they just shared that with me. And they don't expect an answer straight away. And they can just go back and then they just can think about it. And the thing is what people are scared to do and most of us are scared to do is to hear the answer. So if that person comes back and say, do you know what? Yeah, no, actually, I really like you. Let's see where this is going. I'd like to see if we could be together in a relationship. Or they come back, then that's great. And if they don't come back, they say, do you know what? There's too many things that are lacking. Or this is not for me. It's going to hurt, but at least you know now.
Exactly.
And I think people don't want to hear the answers. Yeah. And people don't want to have, it's like that self-awareness and self-responsibility because when you're there going, yeah, but he'll change, you know, or, you know, maybe he's going to like me. You're putting the impetus on someone else. Mm-hmm. And you're not being responsible for your own life. You're giving them the power and that's the problem. And no one wants to, regardless of all the villains in the movies, nobody really wants to have the power of you in their hand because they will lose all respect. There's something very diminishing about that.
I completely agree with that. It's just completely giving away your power to another person. And I think it's also about vulnerability, and there seems to be like this misconception as well that, you know, you can't be vulnerable to a man because he'll run away and like all those things. But actually, you know, if you're coming from vulnerability with someone, and this is something I always come back to, with someone who's safe. Because it's kind of like, I remember in the beginning, like I kind of, in the beginning when I was still dating people who weren't very safe and I was vulnerable with them, it didn't work out very well. And I remember I had a sponsor when I was going to the meetings and stuff. And she was like, I would tell her about it. And she would be like, well, you don't go to a butcher for a loaf of bread. You know,
like, exactly. You have to qualify your audience.
Exactly.
You do freaking have to. You do. Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, but once you've like qualified and you've taken the time and you're like, okay, this person is safe, then you can like be vulnerable and be like, okay, well, this is how I feel and this is what I want, once it feels safe to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's scary. Like, you know, it is. It really, really is. But it's also really attractive in the sense that for me, I know like when my partner shares something with me that he hasn't shared with anyone else or something that's vulnerable for me, that just really strengthens our bond and our relationship in a way that's really empowering.
When they share something like vulnerable about themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause that's how you get to know someone, and you get, the thing is, I usually love the people's quirks more than, I like their flaws more than I do their qualities sometimes, because it allows me to be my really flawed self. That can be really annoying. And so when someone, I quite like it when they're a bit annoying. So I'm like, do you know what? It shows that you're so human and you're separate from me. You're not this perfect little puppy. I'm not interested in that. I love people's quirk.
And
my friends, my family, love their quirks.
Yes. And it's also like, if you're not showing up as your full authentic self, you're actually, you know, you're taking something away from the other person, because you're not giving them the opportunity to see the real you, like including all of your quirks and all of the, you know, little things about you that actually are what make you lovable.
Thank you. Yeah. And you know, that's a lot of things that people, we all do. We always rub people away from the real deal. You know, it's just, it's that is such an important thing that you just said. Really, really important. And so for the last category, the commitment part, people who are commitment phobic, what would you say are the tell sign of your clients that they commit? What would be for someone to realize they're commitment phobic?
I think it's when, you know, they've met someone that they really like, they're dating, and then it kind of gets to the point where either within themselves, they know that they want to commit, or the other person wants to commit, and it's just completely terrifying to them, and they do anything to get out of that situation. So it's just kind of like the fears that come up around that.
So what did they do to get out of it?
It's either just completely leave the relationship, or it's also just things like, you know, like not like breaking down the communication, or what, like this is something that I used to do a lot, is just like self-sabotage. Like when something was going well with someone, is that I would just kind of like, my commitment fear would start to come up, and I would just do something that was like completely not okay, because it was kind of like, in my mind, it was sort of like a test or something. It was like, subconsciously, it was kind of like, oh, okay, well, let's see what happens if I do this thing. And that was just like because I had such like a subconscious fear of actually really having a real intimate committed relationship with someone, that I did so many things to try and avoid that.
But also, I think, so because, you know, we test our partners, and it's kind of like human nature. It's not right. It's not, because I'm not trying to condone it. But I was talking about this with last week's episode with Priska and Baz about, you know, women testing men, or I guess. And I think what they were saying to me is that it does actually take, it's not easy to be the partner of someone who tests you, because it's quite off-putting, it's quite hard, it can be quite mean. But it takes a very mature, self-aware man to realize that it's not about him. You're just feeling scared at the moment. It's about you. And for a man to be able to hold that space, to be there, it's quite a healing process as well, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's very important, because we can't help being humans. We are going to do things. They're also going to do things, and you're going to have to be able to also forgive them. There's a difference between messing up and being malicious, right? Being wrong for you, like someone who's toxic all the time with you, abusive and whatnot. There's a difference between, I'm not saying you have to accept that, but if the general pattern is that person is good for you, you guys are happy, you have your ups and downs like everybody else, life happens, shit happens, but there is like it's off character for that person to act this way. Can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me?
Oh, I think I've lost you.
Have you still lost me now? Can you hear me now?
Hello.
Hi, Jerry. Hi.
Hey.
Hey, I don't know what happened. Zoom just went off and it's still recording. I hope everything's going to be safe. Should be fine.
Oh, gosh. I hope so.
Where did you lose me?
I lost you about like a couple of minutes ago.
So Oh yeah. So, you know, so it's not, I'm not saying you have to, sorry, I'm laughing. bloody technology. So thank you for still being here, by the way. So, you know, it's not because people have to accept toxic people, but I'm saying if something is off character, someone's acting out, I think if we want the partners to accept, to be able to be there for us when we act out, we also have to be able to be there for them, because no one is perfect. And I think that's really important, because that's also how you build trust with someone, that you're not bouncing the minute a bit of shit hits the fan.
Yes. And that's another like avoidance strategy as well that I see a lot, as like the perfectionism. It's like, oh, you know, my partner has to be like absolutely perfect, and it's just not realistic. And it's like you say, as long as, you know, the behaviors aren't abusive, and like, it's kind of like everyone's human and everyone makes mistakes, and it's more about how you approach that and address that in the relationship. And it's also having like the acceptance for yourself, because if you can't accept yourself, it's really, you know, how can someone else accept you?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, once we're with someone who's good, a lot of that actually does fast forward your healing.
Yes.
Because you all of a sudden, you don't go around feeling guilty for your behavior all the time, because one, you haven't acted out as much. Mm. But two, that person they know how to handle it. They're more mature. And you know, it's almost like you've upgraded from dating boys and girls to men and women, you know?
Yeah.
Fully fledged or non-binary. I don't know how you say, like, a young non-binary to a mature non-binary.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yes. Right. So, okay. So there's a question I do want to ask you. What's the deal with sex? Like, is there like a set amount, now that you've done all this work and then you're working with women, would you say like, is there a set amount of time we should wait before having sex? Like, what are your thoughts around sex with, if not as hookups, but like if you actually want to build a relationship?
Yeah. So I honestly don't think there is. What I tell my clients around this is more around really checking in with yourself and being clear on what feels good for you, and also being really conscious of like the intentionality behind it. Because I hear from a lot of women, it's that kind of like, oh, well, I'm waiting to have sex because you're supposed to do that. But if that's not really what you want, and it's not authentic, or it's also the kind of like, or then like the opposite, like, I'm going to sleep with him straight away because otherwise he'll look for someone else, when you're actually not ready. So I think for me, I don't really think it matters when you sleep with someone. It's more around getting really clear on what your values and what your intentions and how you feel about it. That's the most important thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And know how you function. So let's say if you know you're being blinded the minute you have sex, let's say if the guy or the woman is good at it, and then exactly how to, you know, to hit all the different points. And, you know, that also creates this like release of feel good hormones. So if you know that you kind of go a little bit, you know, a bit more crazy over the other person after you've orgasmed, you know that you may not be able to see the real them for a good while. And I think so, or you may not be able to control your certain neuroses that may come up, right? So, but some people are very good at separating those two things.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you're a person who can have sex and separate that with a relationship, then do whatever, do it whenever you want. But it's that thing, it's that checking with yourself, isn't it? Like you said, yeah. And when it's ready, it's ready.
And I think it's just being like really honest with yourself, because like for myself, when I was single, it's like I spent a lot of time like having one night stands because I was like, oh, you know, this is empowering. And I didn't take into my mind that I felt like shit every single time, because I, you know, my patterning and the way that I was couldn't cope with that. I couldn't cope with like the just, you know, having that physical intimacy with someone once and then never seeing them again. Like I would go into such a hole afterwards, and it was just like, okay, this really isn't like, but like you say, some people can do that and be okay. So it's just about getting like really honest with yourself about where you're at. And then also setting, I think what I say as well is like, while you're dating, setting like clear boundaries for yourself, so that you don't get caught up in that, you know, that kind of like lust, or get like carried away. So that if you do decide, okay, I want to wait, for example, for however, until, I don't know, free dates or whatever until I feel safe with this person, that you're really being, that you're sticking to that boundary for yourself and not kind of just going like with the flow.
Yeah. And I think like, it's okay to like, it's very important to check in with ourselves, and it, because a lot of people are putting impetus on the others, like, wait, but they want me to come over, or, you know, they're comfortable. Yeah, of course they're comfortable. They ask you like, are you comfortable with it?
Yeah.
If you're not, you say no.
And again, it's like about, yeah, it's about like being in alignment and just actually, you know, what your values are, like following that and just not just acting on like, yeah, like you say, like what the other person wants. And I see this a lot when I'm speaking with women. It's around like, well, you're telling me one thing. You're telling me that you don't, that you want to wait however long to be intimate with someone, but then you're doing something else. So you're not in alignment. So like what you're, what you're saying in your actions or what you really want or, and the way that you're acting are two completely different things. So you're not going to get what you want because you're out of alignment.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's very easy, I think, nowadays to be out of alignment because we're so bombarded all the time with social media. It gets very draining watching the news, social media. And I'm not talking about just a pandemic, just in general, all year round for years. And we look, you know, unconsciously look at all these quote unquote role models, even if we don't think they're role models, but because we are constantly exposed by social media stars or celebrities or news anchors or politicians, you name it, we don't even know how we feel. Like there are, you know, not to get into it like right now, but there are, for example, there are certain movements that I believe in, that I believe in the message, but I cannot get on board with them because of the way they message it. That is like, they're like bullies. And it feels off. But I think a lot of people, if they really realize that, they will also feel off inside. They're like, this sounds like exactly like the opposition. That it's the same type of message. You know, like you're either with us or you're against us, like the Bush party back in the US like years ago. Say that it's very black and white all the time. You know, you're either good or you're bad, or you either this or you're that. And the world lives in so many gray zones. And I think that's how we can really see how the world and a lot of people are out of alignment, because you cannot, if you're in alignment with yourself, you could not just be with one or another party or, you know, whatever the movement is, you know, whether it's like safety animals or political or human rights. There are so many discernments and gray zones that you, we don't know. We're too scared to listen to ourselves and speak out, that of course is going to show, because we're so used to accept that. Which it, I think is almost like, you know, a spiritual rape, emotional rape, you know, telling people how they should think and feel and not express themselves, that we don't even know how to do that just with dating, because we're so constantly conditioned to have to be in line with, are you with us or against us?
Yeah. You know? And this
are you in or are you out?
Yeah. And this is like exactly why I have a problem with the so-called gurus.
Oh,
because it's like, it's my way or the highway. Like if you don't do, and like, and we're so used to it and so conditioned to it. And when I start working with clients, often they ask me, oh, well, what should I text them back? And sometimes they get frustrated because I'm just like, listen to yourself. Like, I'm not going to give you an answer. Like, I'm not going to tell you, because my experience is different to yours. Like, you need to begin to to listen to your own inner wisdom. Like, I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to like facilitate you to listen to yourself and to have the tools to do that.
Thank you. Exactly. And you know, that's across everything. That's also how I do with like with health coaching. I hate when people say everybody should be vegan or carnivore. This is not a one size fits all.
Yes.
Some people are much better vegetarian because of the genetic mapping. All kinds of things. It takes a lot more discernment. And when someone says, you should do this or you should do that, I'm always like, you need to run. And if I ever say that to you, you need to question me. And you probably need to run too, because no one has all the answers.
No.
It's insane. And we are so used to that. It's part of that instant fix, instant gratification. We don't know. We don't trust ourselves anymore.
Yeah.
We don't even know trust how we feel about other people, ourselves, of political views, all this kind of stuff. It's just... it's intense and people get so, you know, and it descends into chaos. It shows up in, it manifests in many different ways, but when it's in your personal life, that chaos can look like, you know, we start drinking a lot, we start to, you know, we isolate ourselves, become anxious, depressed, because we're out of alignment. We don't believe in ourselves. We don't think we're enough anymore. And we really need to get back to ourselves. And sometimes you're going to have to be unpopular, and that's okay. Not everybody's supposed to like you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I, you know, just love so much talking with you, Jerry. And sorry, I know I go on a lot. I talk a lot. I'm a talker. before you tell us like where people can find you, I always ask two of the same questions to all my guests. And the first one is, what would you tell your 18-year-old self?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I think really what I would say is that I am enough. That would be kind of like my message, just that I'm enough as I am. And I would also tell myself that everything that I'm experiencing, the good, the bad, the ugly, it's all here to teach me something. Mm-hmm. And also that all the shitty dating experiences that I'm going through, they're also here to bring me one step closer to the relationship that I'm in now, and that I had to go through that journey to get here. So I think that I would kind of say, you know, like, hang tight, it's going to be okay.
Yes, absolutely. Is that thought of like, it's happening for you, even if you don't like what's going on, but it's just sort of, you know, the shitty dating and stuff. And obviously I'm not talking about things like war and abuse and that kind of stuff. No. You know, it's, but you know, like the shitty dating, the stupid guys, the boys, they were not that stupid. They were there to teach us a lesson, to teach us something about ourselves. And I think if you can take, that's taking your own power back. It's empowerment to realize that actually I made that choice to still go on dates with that person or whatnot, you know? So, and then the second part is, what stuff do you not put up with anymore?
Yeah, so I think for me, it's like the, I suppose you could say sort of obvious things, but it's just, you know, any sort, for me, a lot of the patterns around the relationships that I was in was emotional abuse. So that's something that I'm really good at, like recognizing the red flags for, and that I don't put up with anymore. And I just have like a really, like a clear list of things that are not okay, and they don't present in my current relationship. So it's not at the top of my mind, but it would definitely be, yeah, you know, the things like lying, cheating, just kind of like not being honest. And there's a sort of like the patterns that I definitely wouldn't put up with anymore.
Yeah. Oh my God. The lack of honesty, I totally relate to that. I cannot relate to someone. It's like I can't even have feelings for someone. You know, you can tell when someone's just not being honest.
Yeah.
Is that you almost feel that void, like there's like a gap between you two. There's like a bridge that you can't cross. Mm-hmm. It's a weird feeling. You just cannot engage. So I'm glad you don't put up with that anymore. It's just, yeah, that's good. Yes. If I can say so.
It's just like banging your head against a brick wall. And, you know, like now that I am where I'm now, saying it is really obvious.
But yes,
like,
yes.
I used to put up with it. Like I used to put up with people lying to me and cheating on me and being dishonest and doing things behind my back, and I would accept it. So it's kind of like to get to the space where I'm really clear that I don't accept that anymore. For me, that's really powerful.
Yeah, I've also put up with not okay and not honest behavior, but that's also like, you know, in previous workplace, in corporates, and just, you know, no fuck that. And so so Jerry, can you please tell us where people can find you, how they can work with you, give us everything.
Yeah, so my website is jerrysuter.com, so just how you spell my name. And I'm on Instagram at the Jerry Suter. And I've just started my business recently. So at the moment, I'm offering free introductory sessions, and you can book those on my website.
Perfect. So people can work online with you?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I'm an online coach.
Okay, perfect. Well, I'll put all the links in the show notes. People can come and click on there or copy and paste it in their browser and find you. And I just want to say a big, big, big thank you, Jerry, for coming on today and sharing all your wisdom and, you know, playing back and forth with me. This was so much fun. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. I've really enjoyed it as well.
And that's our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Please don't forget to rate, review, share it, subscribe it on iTunes, follow it on Spotify or whichever platform you listen from. However you show love is how you can support this show. Drop me your questions or suggestions for future episodes via the website at angie-s.com or come and find me on Instagram. I have two accounts. One is at Tool for Dish It Podcast and at Health Expert Angie, link in the show notes. See you next week. And until then,
using health inappropriately.